From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, December 23rd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And in honor of the people who are going to be working this week, as normal people do, even though it is Christmas week, what do you say we do? The Monday march back to work. Come on. Shoulders back, stiffen the backbone, put a smile on your face, and keep a prayer on your lips, and everything is going to be just fine. All right, let's officially launch this blogcast, shall we? We'll do it with...
The Daily Denogram!
Yep, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. And this one comes to us from the late, great Mark Twain, who said, "Be careful about reading health books. You may die of a misprint." Yeah. And the same is true with WebMD.
Surely you can't be serious.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
So I hear.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Okay.
Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Is it so?
You might be quizzed.
Go ahead, throw your little quiz at me. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1947 the transistor was first demonstrated at Bell Laboratories. Of course, it's one of the basic building blocks of modern electronics, and it's why we all have smartphones. Smartphones that are smarter than we are. It's why one day AI is going to be doing your job. And it was on this day in 1986, Voyager, piloted by Dick Rutan and Jenna Yeager, landed at Edwards Air Force Base in California, becoming the first aircraft to fly nonstop around the world without aerial or ground refueling. Get this, the trip took 9 days, 3 minutes, and 44 seconds. After landing, Rutan and Yeager were rushed to the showers.
Where's the Tylenol?
Looks like every middle-class American's nightmare is coming true as the Biden administration officially granted California permission to ban new gas car sales in the state of California by 2035. Now, California set a strict emission standard that would ban new gas cars in the state by 2035, but officials needed to obtain a waiver from the EPA in order to proceed with the mandate. Well, back on Wednesday last week, unbeknownst to most of us, because, of course, as you know, the government, it does a terrific job of creating smoke and mirrors, right? And what were we talking about last week? All week long, we were talking about the drones. So while we were all concerned about the drones, the EPA Wednesday announced that they'd be approving two waivers under the Clean Air Act that grants California permission to phase out gas cars in that state. And that, of course, is one of many of President Biden's final acts, pushing the auto industry into the green energy sector. Whether they want to go, whether it's financially feasible for them to go there or not, doesn't matter. This is a mandate. Forget the fact that we run as a republic, supposedly, according to our Constitution. This really is unconstitutional. But, and that will be at some point between now and then, that'll be proven. But one waiver grants California near future, California's near future request to mandate that 35% of new cars and light duty truck sales be zero emissions by 2026. And achieve 90% below current emissions by 2027. You know what's going to happen? The economy will crash out there. Actually, it pretty much already has in California, but it'll really crash. Now, the other EPA waiver allows California officials to mandate that all new car sales be zero emission within the decade, which is the most strict EV mandate in the country. Doesn't surprise anybody. California has been this off the rails for decades. Now, here's a caveat. The waivers could soon be revoked by Donald Trump. And he's reportedly planning to rescind both federal EV requirements and any waiver issued for California by the Biden administration. So incoming White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, I don't know if you've seen her, but she's terrific. I'm kind of anxious to see if she is as good as Kayleigh McEnany was. My God, Kayleigh McEnany was bulletproof. She was amazing. She really set the bar. And then we ended up with KJP. Well, first Raggedy Ann and then KJP. It's amazing. But so far, what I've seen of Caroline Leavitt, she appears to be every bit as sharp as Kayleigh McEnany. So anyhow, she talked with Fox News during the campaign. And she says, fresh off imposing his insane, job-killing electric vehicle mandate at the federal level, crooked Joe Biden is preparing to slaughter the remnants of the U.S. auto industry by approving California's waiver request outlawing the sale of all gasoline-powered automobiles. This idea, lofty as it may seem, is absolutely insane. Again, we have met the enemy and he is us. We're on a path, if this were to continue, which it won't. But if this were to continue, we would be on a path to self-destruction. We would kill ourselves as a nation. So EPA Administrator Michael Reagan said that the waivers will protect California residents from dangerous air pollution coming from mobile sources like cars and trucks. Now, I don't know about you, but you see scores and scores of Californians dropping dead due to respiratory diseases. I don't. Haven't heard anything of the kind. In fact, every time you see pictures of California, everybody seems to be healthy. Well, except for the scores of homeless lining the city streets in both San Francisco and L.A., but everywhere else, everybody seems to be doing quite well. Now, American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers CEO and President Chet Thompson described the mandate as, and he's right, unlawful. Now, he says, contrary to claims on the campaign trail that they would never tell Americans what kinds of cars we have to drive, the Biden-Harris EPA did just that by greenlighting California's ban on sales of all new gas and traditional hybrid vehicles. These policies will harm consumers, millions of whom don't even live in California, by taking away their ability to buy new gas cars in their home states and raising vehicle and transportation costs. All of that true. So will sanity prevail? Only the Donald J. Trump administration knows for sure. One thing in particular that I always expect of a president, a really good president of the United States, is that he or she is paying attention to what's happening. Such seems to be the case with President Trump. He just said the other day that he's considering demanding that the Panama Canal be returned to the U.S. if they continue ripping off our country with exorbitant transit fees. Well, this was posted in a rather lengthy Truth Social post, where Trump explained that the Panama Canal is one of our nation's biggest assets and that the fees being charged by Panama are ridiculous, especially knowing the extraordinary generosity that's been bestowed to Panama by the U.S. For some reference, here we go. Boats and ships are currently being charged anywhere from 50 cents to $300,000 to pass through the Panama Canal. Now, you don't need me to explain how vital that route is to the United States and a lot of other countries too, for that matter. The United States uses more than any other country in the world the Panama Canal, right? Now, the exact charge depends on the size of the vessel. So Trump went on to say, this complete ripoff of our country will immediately stop. Or else he's going to demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the U.S. in full without question. So, let me read some of what he had to say here from his Truth Social. He says, the Panama Canal is considered a vital national asset for the United States due to its critical role to America's economy and national security. A secure Panama Canal is crucial for U.S. commerce and rapid deployment of the Navy from the Atlantic to the Pacific. and drastically cuts shipping times to U.S. ports. The United States is the number one user of the canal, with over 70% of all transits heading to or from U.S. ports. Considered one of the wonders of the modern world, the Panama Canal opened for business 110 years ago and was built at huge cost to the United States in lives and treasure. 38,000 American men died from infected mosquitoes in the jungles during construction. Teddy Roosevelt was president of the United States at the time of its building and understood the strength of naval power and trade. When President Jimmy Carter foolishly gave it away for $1 during his term in office, it was solely for Panama to manage, not China or anyone else. It was likewise not given for Panama to charge the United States, its Navy, and corporations doing business within our country exorbitant prices and rates of passage. Our Navy and commerce have been treated in a very unfair and injudicious way. The fees being charged by Panama are ridiculous, especially knowing the extraordinary generosity that's been bestowed to Panama by the United States. And he went on complaining about the ripoff that it is, and he's just threatening. The Panama Canal should be given back to the United States. Maybe he has a very valid point. I mean, come on. Is it so hard to believe that countries all over the world are ripping off the United States because they know that we have a tendency to blow billions and no, make it trillions and trillions of dollars on every other country but our own? I guess if I had an overriding mission in these blogcasts, that would be to steer you and myself, for that matter, to the real truth. And, you know, one thing that really irritates me is when people like Oprah talk about your truth and our truth. Well, there's only one truth, and that's the truth, right? Yes, true that. So when I come across something like this terrific opinion piece in the Western Journal by Michael Schwartz, and he introduces a certain truth to illustrate what he's been noticing, then you know I have to just stop everything I'm doing and say, hey, wait a minute, come here, look at this. So let me read for you what Michael Schwartz wrote. The story is datelined the 20th. And he says, one can hardly contain one's astonishment. In fact, my own shocked expression might remain forever frozen. And of course, he put the word shocked in quotes. He says, ready for this? The establishment media colludes with Democrats and the federal government swindles Americans. Who knew? Well, right away, you know that he's saying this tongue in cheek. So he writes, Thursday on social media platform X, with the prospect of a government shutdown looming, independent investigative journalist and former CBS reporter Cheryl Atkison shared what she called a quick story about government shutdowns and the theatrics behind them. Atkison recalled that around 2013, she and CBS News colleagues searched in vain for a government shutdown's real-life impact. All right, you following me there? We're looking for a real-life impact of an actual government shutdown if the budget isn't approved. Some kind of an omnibus bill, which I think they should call those omnibus bills under-the-bus bills, because what they're doing is they're throwing the American people under the bus. They're increasing the budget. They're attaching all kinds of riders to these bills. And these are things that have absolutely nothing to do with the subject at hand, and that is keeping the government open for another couple of months. And we're being swindled, and we foot the bill. So anyhow, here's what she wrote. She says, when we couldn't find any that should have been part of the story, instead, we kept trying to create the appearance of an impact. Atkison then attributed their behavior to journalists' tendency to fit facts to a predetermined narrative. Well, I've been in the media since I was 13. And this is so true, because it's the lazy way out. And of course, they had plenty of help from Democrats, including then President Barack Obama's administration. So she continues. She says, anyway, the D's, the Democrats were blaming the R's for the shutdown, so we were calling D's and the Obama administration for ideas to report what was the real impact. Taking our cue, these officials fabricated impact that we could report. Now, the fabrication came in the form of cordoning off public monuments in Washington, D.C., which is BS. She wrote, "We knew and even discussed in the newsroom that this made no sense. These monuments weren't manned to begin with." Atkinson characterized this incident as simply the most memorable among multiple acts of shutdown-related theater and deceit. There are other examples, but this is the one I remember the most. Now, let me read for you her actual tweet, because this is very interesting. And this is from December 19th, a couple of days ago. She said, "Quick story about government shutdowns and the theatrics behind them. 1 year when I was reporting at CBS News during a government shutdown, I think 2013, we were sincerely searching for real-life impact. When we couldn't find any, it should have been part of the story. Instead, we kept trying to create the appearance of an impact. It wasn't really trying to be dishonest. It was, in my retrospective view, because the general editorial idea for the story was to show how bad the Republican shutdown was for ordinary Americans. And the answer simply couldn't be that it wasn't. I've written quite a bit about this, but we as journalists too often decide the story in advance and shape the facts to fit our narrative, rather than gathering information and letting that tell the story, whatever it may be. Anyway, the D's were blaming the R's for the shutdown, so we were calling D's and the Obama administration for ideas to report what was the real impact. Taking our cue, these officials fabricated impact that we could report. For example, they cordoned off outdoor public monuments in Washington, D.C. We knew and even discussed in the newsroom that this made no sense. These monuments weren't manned to begin with. The only reason to cordon them off from the public was so that visiting tourists would see the impact," she put that word in quotes, "of the shutdowns, and the news media would have something to take pictures of and interview people about. There are other examples, but this is the one I remember the most." Well, interesting that this one should stick out. Of course, it's rather timely now. But Atkinson is no spring chicken. She's 63 years old, and she's the author of Slanted: How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. And that was published in 2020. And it's made amends. I mean, she's made amends for that behavior, though she certainly qualified as old enough to know better at the time, right? Being 63 now. So the real story involves two facts that remain relevant to this day. First, the establishment media is going to stoop to any degree of dishonesty, provided it helps Democrats. CBS's own 60 Minutes, for instance, got caught doctoring an interview with Vice President Harris in October. Remember that? So, and then second, Democrats and their allies in the Republican establishment desperately want Americans to regard the federal government as essential. After all, the federal government functions as the mechanism by which the establishment plunders American citizens. Well, that's certainly true. Michael Schwartz is really, that was a terrific choice of words on Schwartz's part. According to U.S. News and World Report, listen to this, because this is big. This is important. This tells an overall story that really should be looked into. According to U.S. News and World Report, suburbs of Washington, D.C. accounted for 5 of the 10 wealthiest counties in America by median household income in 2023. Only a massive transfer of wealth to the nation's capital can produce a statistic like that. Imagine that. 5 counties. 5 of the 10 wealthiest counties in America are suburbs of Washington, D.C. Now, that wouldn't be happening if it weren't for rampant lobbying. I mean, how does a congressman end up going to Washington on a salary of roughly $174,000 a year, so $175,000, and they want a raise, and they probably should have a raise, but how do they become millionaires? So many of them do. Certainly not the majority of them. I mean, you've got some congressmen and women who are living in their Washington, D.C. office because they can't afford an apartment. But usually you have a PAC, some kind of a political activism group supporting these representatives. And what's the exchange? Well, the exchange is very simple. Influence. So naturally, Democrats' allies in the establishment media would go to any length to convince us otherwise, you know. So Michael Schwartz, at the very end of his article, he says, "I remain too shocked." Put the word again in quotes for words. Well, clearly, there has always been a lot of sympathy between the mainstream media and actually media in general and the left side of government, the Democrats. It's always been that way. When you look at what Edward R. Murrow did to Senator Joseph McCarthy, and McCarthy was kind of out of line. He really was, but he was trying to uncover communism in Hollywood. And Murrow, for many years, was lauded for his efforts to expose Joe McCarthy. When we found out in the end, McCarthy was right. And look at Hollywood today. I mean, yikes. You can't get any further left than Hollywood. Truly a frightening situation. But now they're being exposed for who and what they really are. And it's being done organically, too. This couldn't have happened any better. This could not have played out any better than it did. The mainstream media is now totally discredited. The percentage of American viewers and readers who still believe in the mainstream media is so low right now, it's in the 20 percentile. And believe me, that's why all these networks are starving. They're losing money. And think about it. They used to be the most powerful form of media on the planet. And now, they're not worth doodly squat. I told you some time back that I was going to stay on this case about Ashley Babbitt's killer, Michael Byrd, a U.S. Capitol Police officer. Got a new revelation here, and it's a bombshell. And it keeps getting worse for this guy, Byrd. And after just the news reported that Byrd had a lengthy disciplinary sheet and numerous dings on his permanent record during his time with the Capitol Police in November, two separate sources reported this month that Byrd, among other things, was on a so-called Brady list or Lewis list. That would be a list of officers who could not or would not be called to testify by prosecutors because of their untrustworthiness. Yikes. Now, the revelation was first reported by Paul Sperry of Real Clear Investigations on December 6th in a post on X, in which he said that Byrd had so many misconduct infractions that he was placed on a secret blacklist known as the Lewis List. And that's a list maintained by the U.S. attorney in D.C. Officers on that list cannot testify in trials. Now, the existence of the Lewis List is hardly a secret blacklist, although who's on the list is a secret. Now, Vice magazine, left-wing magazine, reported on it back in 2020 in the context of a group seeking information about who's on it via Freedom of Information Act requests. Now, the lists, more broadly, are called Brady lists across the country in honor, I guess, if you could call it that, of a 1963 Supreme Court decision, Brady versus Maryland. And in that case, the Supreme Court ruled the government must turn over all evidence that could be seen as exculpatory to defense attorneys. So over time, prosecutors and police departments began to realize that if a police officer had a long record of problematic behavior, and was still on the force. That record of problematic behavior would have to be turned over to the defense in cases where that officer might have to testify. Hence, Brady lists began to be developed within the prosecutorial side of the criminal justice system. Lists of officers who were off limits to testify in cases because of their record, their poor record. And boy, did Byrd have a record. It says here that the issues in Captain Michael Byrd's background included a failed shotgun qualifications test, a failed FBI background check for a weapons purchase, a 33-day suspension for a lost weapon and referral to Maryland state prosecutors for firing his gun at a stolen car fleeing his neighborhood, according to congressional and police documents obtained by Just the News. There will be more, I'm sure, and if there is, I'm going to be more than happy to bring it to you. As we go into the Comedy Corner, a quick program note here. This is the last blogcast for the week. We'll pick it up again on Monday. Tomorrow, I'm going to fulfill a promise to a number of listeners of this blogcast, people who listened to my radio show for so many years in Houston. I will be playing Frontier Christmas tomorrow during the Comedy Corner. Meanwhile, for today's Comedy Corner, we're going to take an old Christmas classic, one that has been a perennial favorite for decades, and rearrange it a little bit for comic effect.
The first thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me is finding a Christmas tree. The second thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The third thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The fourth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
sending Christmas cards,
hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, 5 months of bills,
sending Christmas cards,
hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The sixth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
facing my in-laws,
5 months of bills.
I hate those Christmas cards,
hangovers, rigging up these lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The seventh thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
the Salvation Army,
facing my in-laws,
5 months of bills,
sending Christmas cards,
oh geez, I'm trying to rig up these lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The eighth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
I want Red Farmer for Christmas,
charities, and what do you mean you're in-laws,
5 months of bills.
Making out these cards.
Edith, get me up here, huh?
Well, we have no extension cords!
Finding a Christmas tree. The ninth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
finding parking spaces.
Daddy, I want some candy!
Donations!
Facing my in-laws.
5 months of bills.
Writing out those Christmas cards.
Hangovers.
Now why the hell are they blinking?
And finding a Christmas tree. The tenth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
batteries not included,
no parking spaces,
buy me something,
get a job, you bum,
facing the in-laws,
5 months of bills,
yo-ho, sending Christmas cards,
oh jeez, look at this,
one light goes out, they all go out,
and finding a Christmas tree. The 11th thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
stale TV special,
batteries not included,
no parking spaces,
Mama, go to the bathroom,
charities,
she's a witch, I hate her,
5 months of bills.
Oh, I don't even know half these people.
Who's got the toilet paper?
Get a flashlight, I'd blow a fuse,
and finding a Christmas tree. The 12th thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
singing Christmas carols,
stale TV special,
batteries not included,
no parking,
charities.
Gotta make them dinner.
5 months of bills.
I'm not sending them this year, that's it.
Shut up, you.
Fine, you're so smart, you rig up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree.
terrific Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.